Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. They are getting ready to vote again on the bailout bill in the House. And the very fact that they're going to hold the vote probably means that it's going to pass, because Speaker Pelosi had said that she would not bring it up unless they had the votes to pass. According to the AP right now, congressional leaders are expressing quiet confidence that they will have the votes to send the measure to President Bush for his signature by day's end, 4 days after the earlier version was rejected. So we're keeping a close eye on that. And the New York Times this morning seems to pinpoint the exact moment where these securities went bad. A meeting of the Securities and Exchange Commission in April 2004. Stephen Labaton's story reveals that at the meeting, the commission unanimously agreed to relax an old regulation called the net capital rule. And with that, the five biggest financial institutions in the country were allowed to take on more debt. We're going to talk about this now with Merritt Fox. He's a Columbia Law School professor. Professor Fox, thanks for coming on WNYC with us.
Good morning.
Did you know before this article about this particular meeting in 2004? Did that kind of open the gates?
Well, there was an earlier article in the Times over the weekend about this. I didn't know the exact content of the meeting, but it's been well known for a while that this change in the net capital rules led to much greater leverage among these financial institutions.
Leverage meaning they were allowed to take more risk with investments than they were before?
That's right. In other words, they were allowed to borrow more money and combine a smaller amount of, in essence, equity, money they didn't have to pay back, with borrowed money to finance the financing that they extended.
I'm going to play a clip of audio that the Times has and put on their website that's actually from that meeting in 2004. It's just a little bit of it, but we go into the Securities and Exchange Commission meeting in 2004. Here's one of the commissioners talking about the risk.
This is going to be much more complicated compliance, inspection, understanding of risk than we've ever had to do. Mike, I trust you no end, but I take it you think we can do this.
Were they laughing there at the end of that? They were laughing. Aha, boy, the good old boys in the room. Professor Fox, you didn't happen to recognize that voice or know who?
Well, of course I did. It's my colleague Harvey Goldschmidt on the Columbia Law School faculty, who was a commissioner at the time. I actually think, despite maybe the nervous laughter there, he was putting his finger on the risk associated, but also, in a way, providing guidance for what should happen thereafter, and it looks like perhaps it didn't.
Wow. Now, there is a corollary to this that's been at least making the rounds on YouTube in a clip of a House committee meeting that was discussing problems with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I don't know if you've seen that clip or heard some of the discussion about that.
I haven't.
And there, Democrats who are big on the banking committee, like Barney Frank, were poo-pooing the idea that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were taking on too much risk. And they thought that the regulators were clamping down too hard on them, and they were giving some regulators – we'll play a clip of this next week – but regulators who were giving it to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and saying they were allowing too many risky subprime loans for, you know, the poor people in the country whose mission it is to get into homes more, that they were also allowing too much risk. And Barney Frank and Maxine Waters and a few others were berating the regulators, saying these fundamentals are sound for Fannie Mae. Leave us alone. So this seemed to be going on in, you know, in various halls in Washington.
Well, everybody has their own agendas, and it's sometimes easy to ignore future risks while you're pursuing that.
And as I said, we'll play some of that congressional committee audio next week when we continue on this. But explain the debt cycle we're talking about here. How many people are or companies are involved coming out of that one little discussion by a few guys in one little room at the Securities and Exchange Commission 4 years ago?
Well, many, 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 in the sense that the questions about the different investment banks as to their ability to meet their obligations, those obligations are spread all over the economy at this point. There's only a limited number of companies to which this change of regulations applied, but the essence of the regulation was they could borrow considerably more money to finance their activities. Their business model was to borrow short-term, in essence, and lend long-term, so they always have to keep refinancing. And much of what the financial crisis is about is their difficulty in doing that refinancing at this point.
Refinancing, meaning they have to keep borrowing.
Right. They have to keep, in essence, rolling over their debt.
On shorter and shorter cycles.
Yeah. Correct.
You said this only applied to a few companies. Were they Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and Washington Mutual?
It wasn't the Washington Mutual. It was the large brokerage firm. So Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, the basically the five or six top firms.
So
I believe they had to have a capitalization of $5 billion. So it put a floor on it. But then, as Harvey Goldschmidt is quoted in the Times article this morning, it also meant that it was if it didn't work, it was the big guys who were going to be failing with big consequences.
Would members of Congress have known about that change? Is it possible to say that John McCain, Obama wasn't yet in the Senate, or anyone else in Congress dropped the ball by seeing that the SEC was doing this, Barney Frank, any of them, and so it goes outside that one room of Securities and Exchange Commissioners?
Well, certainly there was, you know, there was public notice about the change in rules, and the rules are published in the Federal Register, and it certainly was known on Wall Street. But hindsight is 20/20. I think, you know, if one had examined this at the time, as you can see, for example, Professor Goldschmidt had concerns about the risks and what needed to be done to follow up with the changes in rules. But whether senators or congressmen were aware of this, I doubt it. I don't think this was a front page type of change in rule. As I understand it, it wasn't reported in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, for example.
Huh. And it's front page news in the Times today. Do you think that this news, or generally our awareness of what happened, will change the way that firms measure risk, or that the government allows firms to measure risk?
Absolutely. I think that this is one of the major lessons. The idea here was, quote, prudential regulation, that instead of having a fixed number, that more sophisticated financial models would be used, and you'd look at what kinds of risks the firm is exposed to and compare that to the amount of capital they had. And they have these fancy computer models that imagine a variety of kinds of things that might happen in the economy and test to be sure that this is enough capital. And those were the routines that the firms with supposed SEC supervision went through. But it's clear now that these models weren't adequate, which raises questions as to whether it's possible to develop adequate models. And my guess is we'll go back to a kind of more old-fashioned approach with significantly larger amounts of reserves required.
Merritt Fox, he's the Michael Patterson Professor of Law, NASDAQ Professor of Law and Economics of Capital Markets at Columbia Law School. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, one of our commenters, when we were talking about the Palin-Biden debate, I read this one out, blamed Saturday Night Live and Tina Fey for creating the low expectations of Sarah Palin. We'll talk in a minute to a writer from Saturday Night Live and a writer from The Daily Show. They're doing a panel on political comedy as part of the New Yorker Festival this weekend, and we're happy that they'll be joining us, too, coming up in about 60 seconds.